We take away the fear using logic and scientific protocol with integrity and dedication to clients. We are devoted to furthering the field, promoting up-to-date research, and setting higher standards. We educate, eliminating misinformation and fraud, empowering clients and fellow researchers. We are the Ghost Society.
Welcome once again to the GS Podcast. I am your host, Jeremy Ryder. Along with me is my hostess with Mimosas, Carolyn Doherty.
Hello.
And fine young Matt has come back to us once again.
Hello.
Welcome back, Matt.
Again. Oh, yes.
Squatch did not get him in the tanning bed. That's a good thing. Hey, today we're doing something, you know, that we've had requests for, you know, questions have been sent in and everything like that, kind of led us towards the subject today, and it's our ghost stories, our personal ghost stories, you know, our own encounters, both before we were investigating and while we were investigating. So tell us a little bit more, Carolyn.
Well, sometimes we focus on natural explanations, and we kind of forget why we keep investigating or what brought us into the field to begin with. And I'd like to emphasize, if we didn't think there was at least the possibility of the paranormal, mm-hmm. you know, we would be saving a lot of time, money, and effort, you know.
This is true.
We do spend a lot of time away from our families, and we spend quite a bit of money on equipment, and, you know, we wouldn't be wasting our time. And and again, we don't believe everybody's crazy who tells us stories. I mean, we've encountered things ourselves that, you know.
Yeah, it just kind of defies explanation.
And talking about valid research, you know, while it's counterproductive to take everything at face value, it's just as counterproductive to dismiss everything. I mean, you might be throwing out potential evidence that, hey, might go towards answering some questions someday.
It's true. It does sometimes happen.
So today, we're going to talk both about our personal experiences away from the field, as well as going into what we've encountered on real investigations.
Sounds
so,
good.
Jeremy, you've been in the field a while. Why don't you share yours?
Fielded one or personal one?
We're starting with personal.
Personal? Okay. Well, just making sure, you know, we've gone off format before. Personal experience, probably the one that really got me interested in the paranormal to begin with, was back probably I was 6 or 7, and my great-grandfather had passed away during this one week in October. And, you know, I was in bed, you know, I couldn't quite get to sleep, you know, the funeral was a few days before. And I felt something, like, sit on the bed. You know, I actually felt the bed, you know, at the foot depress. And, you know, since I really wasn't asleep anyways, you know, I'm looking and I could actually see, like, someone was sitting on the edge of the bed.
Like a depression?
Like a depression on the bed. You know, I had a nice thick quilt and, you know, that was depressed in and everything like this. And, you know, the more I looked at it, there's kind of like this misty luminescence type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it wound up taking form of my great-grandfather, who had just passed away. And you could see his full features or everything like that. I mean, it was like looking at you or Matt, but, you know, you could kind of see through him a little bit. And you could see him trying to say something.
Hmm.
And I kept saying to him, "I can't hear you." You know, I wasn't scared at all. You know, I just had this real peaceful feeling. You know, and I just couldn't hear what he was trying to say. And finally, I could hear what he was trying to say. And he just says, "I just want to let you know I'm okay and that I'm all right." And then as soon as I heard him, he was just gone, just like that.
Hmm.
And, you know, it made me emotional all over again. And even talking about it now kind of makes me emotional. But, yeah, I went into my parents' room, you know, I woke my mother up, you know, and told her what I saw and everything. And, you know, this is my father's grandfather, so,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he was working nights that night. So, you know, I wasn't able to tell him, you know, but I told her, and, You know, she said, you know, that sometimes happens. You know, they'll come back just to let us know they're okay.
Right.
And you find stories like that all over the world.
Yeah. But, you know, that's really what drove my interest. And, you know, I told my grandmother about it, and this was her father. And, you know, she'd always had a, you know, fascination with ghost stories and everything like this. I can't tell you how many books and, you know, that she had both on, like, Bigfoot and, you know, ghost stories collected, you know, the stories of the Brown Lady and, yeah. You know, everything like this. So, and, you know, I just remember reading those, you know, getting them from Scholastic book fairs at school and everything like this. And that's really what got me started. And, you know, when I finally felt I was ready enough and old enough, you know, that's when I really started doing this, you know, not just as a hobby, but kind of, you know, as a, well, I guess I'd call it a hobby in one sense, but.
Well, you want to find out answers
yeah.
for yourself.
Yeah, I can't say, you know, as a professional basis, you know, but, yeah. You know, as a more serious investigator, I guess you could say.
Hmm. So.
Matt, what about you?
I have to say one that stands out in my mind is childhood. One of the reasons I'm just so intrigued in this field is the old house where I lived at. This house was probably built around the 1940s. It was your typical, you know, four-bedroom house. My bedroom was situated on the top. If you came up our stairway, there was a landing to the left, and that was had the closet and everything. It was a big landing, and that's where my bedroom was. My parents' room was across. And I know it wasn't a dream or anything when I woke up because of the fact I had a poster, being a young child, that I had tacked to my ceiling, and one of the corners had fallen down. And when I had gotten out of bed, I had gotten out of bed for the reason that I just woke up and something didn't feel right. I noticed that coming from the stairway that was coming up, there was a slight glow as if somebody had been down in the kitchen and walked past and triggered the little motion sensor nightlight that my parents had down there. When I got out of bed, I had stepped on a tack that had fallen down from that. And so
leave it to your luck, huh?
So I pulled the tack out, obviously, you know, and then I heard something that had, I don't know if it responded to me pulling the tack out or making my yelp from the tack going in, but I heard something in the stairwell. When I had, it sounded kind of like somebody moaning, like somebody was in pain. I went over to the stairwell, and I kind of looked over the landing, and as the stairs were coming up, there was probably about 50 steps. There was, I couldn't really see them, but there was a woman laying on the stairs, and you could see just the silhouette of her from the glow from the kitchen nightlight that was shining from around the dining room and kind of casting a light glow up the stairs. And this woman was laying, like, stomach-wise on the stairs and kind of moaning as if she was in pain. My first assumption is, something's wrong with Mom. So I yelled down over the landing, "Mom, are you okay?" And the woman responded, I'm okay. My stomach's cramping. Go back to bed." So I said, "Mom, are you really okay?" Because it sounded really painful, as if she was in mid-cramp and couldn't make it up the stairs because she was laying partially on the stairs. So I continued to stand there and ask her if she needed anything. Never really looked up at me. And she just continued to say, I just have a stomach cramp. Go back to bed. I'll be okay." So I went back to bed, and probably for the next 15 minutes, I sat there and listened to my mother in the stairwell moan, this horrible moan as if she was in a lot of pain. I eventually fell back to sleep. Next morning, downstairs at breakfast, and I asked Mom if she was okay because she sounded like she was in a lot of pain last night. My mother had no idea what I was talking about. My mother said she'd been in bed all night long and hadn't been up and had no stomach pains. I know for a fact there was a woman laying in my stairwell. And I always remembered that. It went on with me for years. It was somewhere maybe like 10 years later or something like that. I don't have an exact timeline for that. but we were doing some research into my house due to the fact of a property. The new neighbors on the property said we owned this side of the tree. We said we owned this side of the tree. That typical dispute. We looked into original owners and land cat, you know, in the through the land department, and back in the 40s, the original owner of the house was a woman, a single woman who had lived there, and she had actually died of what was known at the time of pancreatic or cancer.
Oh, wow.
And she'd actually died in that house, and you can actually pull up the actual county records. She had died in that house and actually had died in that stair landing. Never made it back upstairs to bed.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's actually pulled that up through one of those, what are those things at the library?
Microfiche?
Where you spin the thing and it pulls down the newspapers. We actually pulled that up, and my mother has that actual article.
Wow. Did it ever show, like, a picture of her?
No, it never showed a picture. It just had the article. A woman, and I'm not going to list the town or the house due to privacy, because my parents do still live there. But, the actual woman had died of pancreatic cancer. There wasn't really a treatment for it at the time, so I guess she was just homebound. And it was one of those things where, you know, you're just left to deal with it until you pass, and I guess she passed in the stairwell trying to make it back upstairs to bed.
Wow.
That's kind of sad.
But it was always something that really just stuck with me of, did I see a reoccurring, you know, something there in the stairs, but yet it interacted with me, it told me to go back to bed. So was it intelligent? And it just played on me for years that what I saw actually wasn't a dream, and it makes sense because of the tack. I knew I was awake.
Yeah.
And it's always stuck with me, and that house has had many more really strange incidences.
Wow. Well, I had to give you some sense of validation when you found that article, too.
It did. I mean, I had almost completely forgotten about it. It was in the back of my mind until that land dispute was coming up with the neighbors next door about the property lines. And they had to look up to who the original owner was who built the house and purchased the property. And it was a woman, and I can't remember how it came up, but that she had died of the cancer. So that's when I decided to look into it and say, well, that's kind of strange.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Weird stuff.
How about you, Carolyn?
I never had anything really when I was a kid, but when I was older, after I got married, we lived in a very old farmhouse. I think it was built 1870s, on a good amount of property. And one day I was, you know, just getting laundry, doing my normal stuff. I was up on the second story. I looked out the window. We had a spring-fed pond on the property. This was in March, so there was a thunderstorm, and it was around dusk, and I remember looking out the window, having the basket of clothes in my hand, and there was a guy in a canoe on our pond. Now, I could only see basically the silhouette because of the lightning.
Right.
And my first thought was not ghosts. My first thought was, why the hell is somebody on my pond, and what are they doing in the middle of a thunderstorm trying to get electrocuted so they will die on my pond, which I really didn't want. So, I was trying to look at the features because I wanted to know which neighbor it was so I could go over and yell at whichever neighbor it was. So I get downstairs. I had to have looked at this thing for a good minute at least because I was trying to see the features. So finally, I ran downstairs onto our landing with a little deck. And I have to say that it only took me 30 seconds to get to the deck. The deck faces the same exact angle. It's just a story lower. And I got there and there's nothing. Absolutely nothing. Nothing anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have woods and stuff. And even if somebody got out of the canoe, dragged the canoe, and I mean, there's just no way in 30 seconds it could have disappeared like that. And the odd thing about it that I remember is that it was just picture still the whole time I was watching it. To try and figure out who it was. It never moved, and I don't, you know, It was just stick fill. Still, so if it had been misidentification, like say if there was an animal, like a deer or something out on the pond, again, I don't think it would have just vanished in 30 seconds.
Right.
No. If, you know, I had been hallucinating, that's the one and only time in, that I had this experience in the house where I visually saw something like that. And, you know, again, I was walking around, I was doing laundry. It wasn't like I was, you know, off in La La Land. So my husband came home, and I kind of told him what happened. Well, the next morning, he went out. I mean, he couldn't find footprints, drag marks, or anything. And because of all the weeds around the pond, if somebody had taken a canoe out...
Yeah, you would have had some depression.
You would have... It was wet. They would have pushed the grass.
Yeah. And the other thing we found out about our... You know, yes, it's a very little pond now, relatively. But we found out a couple hundred years ago, it was part of a much bigger system. Because there's a pond on the adjacent property, and at one time it was all one huge pond.
Oh, wow.
So, and we do know there are a lot of burial grounds around that area. So, who knows? I mean, we've had neighbors who claimed they saw Native Americans. This one neighbor, it was on their property, and when they went out to go look... there were no footprints in the snow or anything. So, I don't know. I don't know what I saw. But that kind of stuck with me. Because, yeah.
That's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what do we got upcoming here?
Well, those are, you know, obviously our personal stuff that may have gotten us more interested in becoming investigators. But, you know, let's talk about, a lot of people ask me, at least personally, have we encountered anything on investigations? Because a lot of times we don't present evidence. We don't have a lot of evidence on our website just simply because we don't think it would pass peer review. Mm-hmm. We don't think it has enough...
doesn't have enough meat to it.
Meat or, you know, we feel it's evidence, but it would never stand up on its own. But yes, we do encounter things. And Jeremy, you've encountered a couple things on...
Yeah, where do I start?
Investigations.
Well, I guess I'll start before I founded the Ghost Society. Due to the fact that my father was in the military, I had the opportunity to travel quite a bit. One of the places we were stationed was in Okinawa, Japan. And you know, made friends on the base and everything like this, and... this one local who could speak English told me of this group over there that, you know, did a lot of investigations into paranormal. Now, the Japanese society is quite different in a lot of respects to our own. They believe in ghosts a lot more without necessarily having the evidence to back it up and everything like that. You know, they're a very superstitious culture. But I was intrigued. You know, he told me some of the places that this group was going and everything like this, and he knew the founder of the group and everything like this, which is Yoshi Takahara. And I'm like, all right, yeah, I'll give it a shot. I go, I'm not going to understand the thing they say. He goes, oh, not a problem. He goes, you know, I'm going along too, and I'll be able to translate for you. I'm like, all right. So I got permission from my dad and mom. And our first stop was what's more popularly known now as the Suicide Forest, which is outside of Tokyo and near Mount Fuji. Beautiful locale to begin with. I mean, just taking the train up to Mount Fuji and everything like this, it's just absolutely gorgeous. So I was really pumped up, you know, to do this. I didn't know at the time of the rate of suicides had started probably 5 to 10 years beforehand in this forest. So I didn't really know what I was getting into. But we get there, you know, we had to stop at the ranger station, get our passes, because we were going to be camping there and everything. And they didn't have all the signs and everything up then, like they do now, is seen on, you know, when Josh Gates investigated there. They didn't have any of those signs up. So, you know, we're going along and we're taking the trail. The one thing that the ranger did ask us to do is stay on the trails. Which we did for the most part, but being who we were, we kind of went off the beaten path. And we came across a bunch of remains, and remains of tent sites, and, you know, human remains also. When we came across that, we radioed back to the ranger station. And they said they'll send someone out. One of the things that they do is if this happens, one of the beliefs of the Japanese is if the actual remains aren't put to rest, that it would come back as a vengeful spirit. They actually have a ranger sleep in the room with the corpse to make sure it does not reanimate or anything like this. Worst job ever, in my opinion.
Heck with that.
So it finally gets nightfall, everything like this, and we saw some very strange things. I could have swore at one point that we saw somebody walking up the trail towards us, and then it just disappeared. And this part of the forest was thick, but it wasn't thick enough to where you wouldn't be able to see somebody.
Right.
You know, move off the trail. You would have heard twigs snap, something, mm-hmm. you know, and there was just, like, no sound. And, of course, the true members of the group, you know, they're all excited about this. Mm-hmm. Plus, they were absolutely petrified about this because they thought it was one of these vengeful spirits. So, and I was just very, very puzzled by it. I thought it was cool, but at the same time, I was very confused because, again, you could have swore this was a person. You couldn't actually see through this person either.
Right.
It was just like Matt all suddenly disappears out of the chair. It was that, just like that. So that was one of the cool experiences. I had the opportunity to go to Germany and investigate in the Black Forest. Over there was a group that was more into the mythology side of it, you know, vampires, werewolves, this sort of thing. So that's what they were out to investigate. And I'm like, hey, it sounds like fun. I had nothing better to do than drink beer, you know.
Yeah.
So, and the Black Forest was absolutely beautiful to me. And nothing really much there. But on the crypto side, you know, we heard some things that did not fit the local animal population there. So I'm not really sure what it was. But whatever.
But it probably...
It could either have been a German Bigfoot or a werewolf. I have no freaking idea. But or it could have just been a local that got his grog on too much. I have no idea.
Yeah.
There wasn't, like, any evidence of it. We did get pestered, you know, by something that just kept out of visual range. And it was out of the range of our flashlights and everything else. So here in the States, Matt, you were with me on this one that's really memorable to me.
Which one's that?
The one in Syracuse.
Oh, yes.
This was a building. It was built in the 1800s. Was a boarding house for the Erie Canal travelers at one point. And this place was so freaking active. And this is down the hood of Syracuse.
Well, the hood now, but back then it was, that district was a beautiful shopping district. And the building was built with that old-time architecture of brick and just...
it's beautiful red
brick
building.
They put their feelings into building it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this place was very high class at the time. And the top floor had been totally overrun by feral cats. Second floor, there was a lot of spongy areas. But the apartments, I mean, if you're going to be homeless, I mean, this would be the building I would shack up in. Because the top floor apartments were, you know, amazing. We only really had access to the first floor in the basement of this. And the first floor was huge. It was separated up into shops. The guy that called us in ran a tattoo parlor out of one. And whatever was there was scaring his customers off. And it used to be a bar next door that had been closed down for at least 15 years.
Only access to it would have been...
through the basement.
Through the basement. Take a stone corridor and then come on up through.
Yeah. Anyhow, so we went down into the basement. A couple different teams split up. Matt, myself, and Wendy, who used to be an investigator with us, one up into this bar area, and this is Matt's first time with our group. We were just listening and taking audio readings, and Matt says, "Hey, I see a light back in what used to be this bathroom. There's no running water or anything to this anymore." And just as Wendy and I were turning around, we all heard what sounded like a cry, like a female cry, which Matt promptly said, "Jesus Christ," to,
and as he jumped right next to us, like somebody could come right up in our ear to say it.
Yeah. So we looked around, couldn't find the source. I sent Matt and Wendy down the basement. I stayed upstairs, and all of a sudden you could hear, like, the bar was back in business. You could hear glasses clinking together or beer bottles, conversation, just like a lot of conversation like it would be in a busy bar. Later in that evening also, we had a apparition manifest, but it was out of camera range.
Of course.
So it was awful. The place, the outside temperature was like 67 degrees. Inside dropped down to 30 degrees. And we couldn't explain that either. It was just very odd. So, I mean, yeah, a lot of experiences. Boonville, we had an apparition in the basement there, which John's office, I guess, is doing his show there now. Or had recorded there. So, there's many. It'd be a whole separate show just to some of the experiences that I've had. But at least I got to share a couple with Matt, anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Carolyn?
You know, I've investigated before the Ghost Society, and I got to go to some really neat locations. But a lot of those experiences were on that I don't know. You know,
right.
Could go one way, right. Could go another. But I have to say, since I've been with the Ghost Society, there's a couple locations that I think we all can agree...
We're very cool.
...are weird. One investigation in particular that we've been back, what, 4 times now?
Yeah.
Now, we've been on a lot of investigations where we think we hear something that sounds like footsteps. And, again, it can go either way. There is one particular investigation at this place where two of us were on the far side. The rest of you guys were over on the other side of a particular room, and we heard running. I mean, there is no mistaking what we heard. It was footsteps with definite weight and definite movement going in a particular direction, right, running overhead. And I have never heard footsteps that clearly that weren't, in fact, footsteps.
Yeah.
And we radioed up to you guys. Mm-hmm. You and Justin were up.
We were on
up.
The floor directly above.
And they never heard anything. And if skeptics are going to say, well, it could have been them, unless they levitated to the middle of that particular floor and then started running.
In a locked room.
it was not them.
Yeah.
And we had cameras in that hallway. That he didn't pick anything up. But both Tim and I, the interesting thing is Tim and I were in that room. We were actually listening downstairs because we thought we heard something downstairs, and then we had it running above us. And
yeah, Tim doesn't spook easy.
When Tim looks at you and says, "That was freaking cool," and he's impressed, then you know it's something to be impressed about.
Yeah.
And another time at that same building, you guys all remember this because I had my Tourette syndrome experience. There was a locked door. We were in that hallway where different investigators at different times on different different investigations saw shadows down that hall.
Yeah. Yep.
I was talking to you guys, and not more than 3 feet away from me, there was a knock on the door. And the door was locked. We all know the door was locked.
Mm-hmm.
We unlocked the door. We looked in. There was just no way, you know. And we all heard it. And yes, I wasn't scared, but boy, was I startled. I kind of...
The F-bomb was used.
The F-bomb was used. But yeah, that kind of... That did something. And then we talked about this one on different episodes, but we were at a different location... And I audibly heard people talking. And I thought it was you guys. And I actually yelled at you guys because we were trying to do an EVP session.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you can hear me clearly on one of my recorders going, "Is that you guys talking?" but you don't hear the voices that I'm referring to. Then on my second recorder, which was not more than 10 feet away, you can, when you play it back, you do hear the voices. So why one recorder picked it up and the other did not, I don't know. But
yeah, it's not like you use cheap recorders either. No, you got very high-end recorders.
Yeah, I had high-end recorders, and I don't know how to explain it. And again, if it was radio interference, why would we have heard it audibly?
Yeah.
Because the other two investigators with me heard the same voices. So I don't know how to explain that one.
Nah. How about you, Ben?
A lot of different experiences. For one, the Syracuse investigation there. With the noise definitely comes to mind. It was really one of the first audible noises that I've heard. It was my first investigation. And to hear something like that and know that it wasn't any of the three of us in that abandoned building, that was quite small, so it was definitely searched over. Nobody else was there. Certain buildings, there is one particular one in Watertown, New York, that we were investigating, to where there was two of us up at the command station up on the fifth floor of this building, and the rest of the group, which I believe was about four of you or so, were on the floor directly below us. Sitting there at command station, we happened to hear what sounded like a door slam.
Oh, no.
A door slam, but it sounded very faint, as if it was maybe on our floor or maybe the floor below. About 2 seconds later, I mean, it was muffled, it was kind of quiet, but it was definitely noticeable. About 2 seconds later, Jeremy, I think it was you, or maybe it was Carolyn,
yeah,
phoned
was
into us. Did you guys drop a wrecking ball through the floor? Apparently on the floor that they were on, which was below us, and maybe about from where our command station was, about 40, 50 feet down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which would have been directly underneath a locked room on the floor that was adjacent to the room we were in. There was a crash so loud that everybody on the fourth floor apparently hit the deck.
We actually ducked because it was such a loud crash.
It sounded like the fifth floor was coming down on top of us.
Those of us who were leaning against the wall, you actually felt the vibration. Yeah.
But yet, the two people upstairs, myself and the Justin, were on that floor, and it sounded as if somebody had just shut a door down the hall. But for you guys, it sounded like our floor was coming in on you. There was nobody else in the building. That is actually confirmed. And the heating systems in the building were not on at the time.
No, it was summer.
There was no explanation for that noise anywhere in the building. And we asked the only resident who resides in that building, which is five floors, he's the only resident that lives in the building, if he's ever heard a sound like that. He's never heard anything like that.
Wow. And we've been there. This was our fourth investigation there. We've never heard anything like that before. Yeah. And it was.
Well, we were actually breaking in a couple new investigators at that point. Boy, what a welcome it was.
Yeah. This was also the same building.
They never came back, did they?
No.
Yeah.
This was also the same building to where when we unlocked the room we were going to use on the fifth floor for the command station.
Yeah.
That was weird.
There were two folding chairs stacked straight up. Mm-hmm. Behind this locked door.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other exit out of the room except that one door.
Yes.
And in order for somebody to put those chairs there, they would have had to have had their hand all the way around the back side of the door while standing from the outside to stack those chairs, and then pull your arm out as fast as you can, because you have about a second before that door shuts.
Yeah, we tried.
Shuts.
You guys tried numerous times to recreate that. There was no way that we could stack
here. Here's what made that even cooler, though. That was the same room we used for a command station on before.
We were
the last ones to leave that room, and we locked that door.
And those chairs were stacked up over on the
other side of the room.
On the other side of the room next to that table.
Yeah.
So somewhere between us leaving, and again, this is an abandoned floor.
Yes.
We're the only one person that has the key in the building doesn't use that floor, but yet there's no physical way for them to stack those chairs behind that door.
Against that door. That was the weird thing. It was against the door as if
closed locked door.
As if to say, don't come back in here.
Exactly.
Where did we catch that EVP?
In that room.
In that room.
Where are the footsteps heard that were noticeably heard running across the ceiling, where even Tim was amazed by
Yeah.
it shows they were right above. They were coming. That was from that corner door down the hall.
Yeah.
It's just some amazing stuff in that building. Some amazing audios I've heard before. I've seen some shadows on cameras that are been cast on walls where there's no light producing anything. I've seen some amazing things personally on investigation that can be backed up by people with me. That's why we always investigate in pairs.
Yeah.
Always somebody there to back it up. And all these stories I'm telling right now, everybody in this room, all verified. And these things were confirmed between two different floors at the same time.
Yeah. That's what makes it amazing.
Yeah. That building, now granted, a lot of people can say, second guess us and everything, and maybe there is something, maybe there is an explanation that we don't know about, but all I can say is we don't have it right now, because
there's no answer for it. The only thing I have to say is I may not have an answer, but I know the question I want to ask.
Yeah.
And that is, what was that?
Yeah.
Because there's no explanation on what that was.
Well, another experience we both had, it was a residential case that all of us had something happen there this last time. And again, we don't have the footage. Because it's just one of those, you know, Murphy's Law thing.
Yeah.
We came back to this place because we had too many weird things happen. And again, if it was just one or two things independently, we'd say, and we wouldn't bother. But too many things happened in conjunction with each other. So we went back to this location, and I'm the first one to say I was going to completely dismiss this out of hand. Jeremy and I were at command, and we're watching the cameras and stuff, and you guys were up on the second story.
Second floor.
You and Justin. And the camera in the room you guys were in moved a good 15 degrees to the right. And we actually had a client watching at the same time. So, of course, we're kind of, well, okay, what's that? And she was kind of freaked out, and we're like, well, we can't really consider that because the investigators are right there and maybe they kicked something. So then we radioed up to you guys, and you guys tried to replicate moving that camera, and you couldn't. So then when it was our shift to go up, we did the same thing, and we could not get that camera to move again.
Stopping the floor, hitting the dresser.
The carpet underneath the dresser.
The extra cord that was hanging down, there was enough slack that had been rolled just in case we needed any more feet with it, had been placed underneath the dresser, and as much as you kicked your foot against that and yanked it and tugged it, would not move the camera.
Not to mention, this camera's on a rubber base, which prevents vibration and slippage.
Justin and I were, at the time, about 2 feet away from the camera when Justin said that he felt like something had touched the back of his neck, and he was to the left of me. At that moment, I felt as if the whole atmosphere in the room changed. I literally froze, and it felt as if something very creepy was just staring me down. And then 2-3 seconds later, the camera to the right of me moved 15 degrees.
Yeah.
So that sequence of events all happened.
And to go further, going back to the previous investigation, you had possibly seen something in that room at that window. The camera was trained on that window from the other room, and it moved away. It actually moved away from
that
the
facing that window.
So I'm not saying it's a ghost. I'm not saying it's even paranormal. I'm just saying it was
a lot
pretty
of different
weird
coincidences.
The only way we could actually replicate the movement of that camera was to actually pick it up and move it.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, one more piece of the puzzle: the DVR did not record it. And again,
because the stop button had been hit.
Well, and again, before people
I don't know
say
how.
Human error. My digital camera, I had new batteries in it.
Died twice.
So I put brand new batteries in it. I dumped those batteries, put brand new batteries in it. It died again. We had to have you go out and buy new batteries so I could use it.
Video camera Justin was using upstairs at the time when this camera incident happened. He went through, he had 2 hours worth of battery time.
Yeah.
Within a matter of moments, it was blinking that it was in the low zone and ready to die, and it did die. It died probably about 1 minute before the camera incident happened.
Yeah, and I changed the battery on that camera with a brand new one, fully charged, which had 6 hours worth of recording time.
Yeah.
And it died within three to five minutes.
We were doing an EVP session, and it just shut off. It died. So, yes, I mean, you could say, oh, that was human error on the DVR thing, but when you put all those other camera failures and battery drains together, I'm sorry, something that was too much.
The only way to stop recording on that is to go through the menu and select the stop recording. And the thing has worked perfectly fine since. I've tested it and everything, and I just have no explanation.
Weird stuff. So there you have it. We're going to take a break before we do our questions. Before, though, we should kind of plug our website.
Yes, it's www.thegsny.com. On there, we have links to both our Twitter feeds and our Facebook page, to where you can check out some of the pictures that we do have posted up there. Also to see, you know, what we're doing on a daily basis or whatever. So feel free to check those out. Up there is all of our past shows also. If in case you missed a show, you can review all of our past shows.
Yep.
And there's links on that page also to where you can email us your questions or comments, which is contact@thegsny.com. Mm-hmm. We also have links on our regular webpage for Carolyn's Creepy Corner. You want to give us the URL for that, Carolyn?
carolynscreepycorner.blogspot.com.
And also we have some other, you know, interesting links there to some of our friends' pages and whatnot. You can check that out if you wish. So we're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we'll have the questions sent in from our listeners.
The buzz around the water cooler at your paranormal team's head office. He's all about MyParrot.net.
MyParrot.net has everything paranormal enthusiasts desire.
Events, blogs, videos, celebs, radio. Spice up your profile with the wonderful customization features that MyParrot.net has that other social networking sites do not.
Point your Firefox browser to www.myparrot.net.
Do it now. Do it today.
There's no charge to be a member at MyParrot.net.
It is 100% free.
Are you looking to network with thousands of other paranormal enthusiasts?
Or anything ghosts and hauntings, UFOs, cryptozoology, and anything mysterious and unexplained?
You need to tell a friend today and log on to www.myparrot.net.
MyParrot is the paranormal social network.
Welcome back, and we're going to take some of the questions sent in by our listeners here. Carolyn, why don't you lead us off?
This comes from a listener.
A listener?
A listener.
Ooh, that's a new one.
I don't know if there's some snarkiness to this. What do you think?
I don't know.
If you guys never find anything, why does your group keep investigating?
Mostly so we can make Justin do stuff that he wouldn't normally do in public.
That's true.
That is true. But no, I mean, because there's always the possibility that you will have something. Plus, you know, we like to do the research. We like to try new techniques, stuff like this. So it gives us the opportunity to do so.
And at least that's mine.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, especially for the clients.
Try and give answers to the clients. And, you know, it isn't that we never find anything. Again, like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, sometimes we find an awful lot of stuff, but unfortunately we know, because we're hypercritical ourselves, we know it's not going to pass. Yes. We know it's not going to pass peer review. And it's not going to satisfy skeptics. So
I don't know if it wouldn't pass peer review, but, you know, there's so many smash and bash people out there. It's just, it's pointless. You know, if we have even a slightest sliver of a doubt, you know, there's just going to be people out there that are just going to rip stuff apart.
If we have that slight sliver of a doubt, there's going to be a million people out there that are going to use that sliver of a doubt.
I mean, plus,
Plus, the most important reason, if the client doesn't want us to post it, we're not going to post it.
Exactly.
Yeah, a lot of this does happen, and it happens in a way that it's kind of hard to conceal, or, you know, there's that to consider as well. But, we do catch stuff, it's just that we only post, we're very strict about what we post.
So. Yeah.
Okay, next question.
Let's see, it says, has anything ever followed you home from Tammy?
Tammy? Is Tammy following me home? Oh, I actually remember. Nothing that I know of has ever followed me home.
I'm not saying that the possibility's not there. There's always that risk factor, and we don't know. We just don't know.
Carolyn said Squatch followed me home one time.
He did. The only thing that's followed me home, unfortunately, is fleas. Oh. There was a case where I came home and had bites all over and had to bring out the bug spray. But
I remember that one.
So that's the only thing that's followed me home has been
crickets,
fleas. But as far as anything supernatural, no. And again, you know, we're not saying it's not a possibility. I mean, I personally
just saying it hasn't happened.
Yeah.
That's because we all have a Snuggie.
Moving on.
Next question is from No Name. Interesting. Have you investigated your own homes?
No. I actually never considered it, but nothing ever happens there.
I probably wouldn't investigate my own. I haven't and wouldn't because of the fact that I enjoy what I do so much. If I had it with me 24 hours a day, I would probably never stop investigating.
When I lived at my old house, I made a feeble attempt. This was before I really knew what I was doing, and I caught an EVP that I did not like. So that was it. I will not investigate my own.
Thus why she doesn't live there anymore.
Well, no, actually, I mean, upon review, knowing what I know now, doing a lot more research, it probably wasn't even a valid EVP, and I probably just scared myself. But it goes into the whole psychological thing. Do I want to freak myself out? Do I want to put a suggestion there and not sleep well at night?
Do I want to know if there is something here? Now that I know it's here, I'm looking for it around the clock.
Yeah, so I don't want that suggestibility. And, you know, and at the old house, you know, do I think some things happened? Yeah, do I think a lot of it was explained? Yeah, but... But no, I would not do my own house for that reason.
Well, that's fair enough.
Yeah, I think that answers that pretty well. There's plenty of reasons not to do your own home, like Matt was saying. I mean, you'd be doing it 24/7, you know. You made a valid point, whether you be, you know, a little bit of trepidation, you know, sleeping in a place that you think something might be watching you,
right,
type of thing. Like one reason why I can't sleep good in a motel, because you never know.
Yeah. Well, another thing that I do want to kind of qualify there, though, is I do practice with equipment. I mean, my cameras, my audio, you know, when I got my new recorders and stuff, I did, you know, I do a lot of practicing and I call it fake investigating, just to get used to the equipment.
Ah, kind of like on TV.
And, you know, especially in our old property, we had a huge barn. So that lent me a lot of practice time to go out in the barn and do some, quote, practice investigating. But
Dan just said he hated it when you gelled your hair up, like, you know.
Yeah, I gelled my hair and had my muscle shirts on and went around screaming, dude, what was that? So,
Move from left to right.
Never right to left.
Yeah.
It's like NASCAR.
Yeah. And I have to say for Dan, I mean, when we were at the old house, I mean, he didn't care if I did one way or another, but he could understand after that one time I kind of freaked myself out that, that I was done doing that, so.
Yeah, hopefully that answers your question. If any of you do have questions or comments, please feel free to send them in to contact@thegsny.com. Or you can send us a message through our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/ghost society. So you know, feel free to check that out. We're on Twitter. You know, we're everywhere. MySpace even. I mean, who goes to MySpace anymore? But we're there. So feel free to send us in comments, questions, you know, what you would like to see for future episodes even. You know, we're always looking for ideas for that also. So check us out there, www.thegsny.com. We got links to Carolyn's Creepy Corner up there. I highly recommend, you know, people that want to actually get some good knowledge about paranormal investigation, check that out. We also have our friend Wes Forsythe's up there. If you want to get differing opinions on things, he looks at both sides of it. iHuntGhost.com. So check that out. There's a link also on from our page there in our link section. So, and if you want to check out any of our past episodes, they're under the tab Our Shows. Our show on our main page. So
there's also links if you get on mypara.net. There's also links to our show, yep, as well as a lot of good information on the forums.
So. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. MyPara is always a good spot to stop and, you know, get some information. So join us here next week. It'll be our 16th episode. We're up to 16 at that point. Sweet 16.
Sweet 16.
So tune in with us, and we'll see you then.